Pacific Group is an open meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and all members of the community are welcome. The single most important aspect of AA recovery, however, is the principle of one alcoholic relating to another alcoholic. Therefore, only alcoholics participate in our meeting. If your primary problem is other than alcoholism, we think it would be wise that we think it would also be helpful to you to contact an anonymous organization that more specifically deals with your addiction. In any case, we hope that what you learn here may be helpful to your recovery and or understanding. Good evening. My name is Alex, and I'm an alcoholic. Welcome to the Pacific Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. This meeting is 2 10-minute speakers, followed by a main speaker. Speakers, please note that you will be given a 5-minute, 1-minute reminders when it is time to wrap up your talk. Our first 10-minute speaker is Wayne. Please join me in welcoming Wayne.
Hi, I'm Wayne. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you, Marty, for inviting me to speak tonight. It's an absolute privilege to be speaking with the group of Pacific Group. I have a lot of respect for folks of the Pacific Group. A lot of them have shown me what being an alcoholic and being an Alcoholics Anonymous really is by example. And Marty is one of those folks that have done that. I have a couple Clancy stories, but I won't go there. Just say that a couple of months after having Clancy, I still had the root beer hard candies rolling around in my car. my sobriety date is 5-16-09, and my home group is the Winners Group of Alcoholics Anonymous in Milwaukee, Oregon. I have service positions there, and I'm involved with that group. And I only say that because I believe those are the things that are important for me to stay in Alcoholics Anonymous and to stay in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous is to be of service, to have a home group. I have a sponsor that has a sponsor, and those are the things that I believe that are the foundation of this program. You know, I came into Alcoholics Anonymous not even believing that I was alcoholic. I really didn't know what an alcoholic looked like. I had my perception of alcoholic, you know, the guy that, you know, crawling out from under the bridge with the brown sit paper bag, and, you know, and I definitely didn't fall into that. But, I came into the rooms, you know, I've heard it put it quite a few different ways. But mine was a nudge from the judge, and, you know, and I came in just to get my slip signed and to jump through the hoops that I needed to jump through to get back to the life that I thought was a normal life, you know. As I sat in the seat of Alcoholics Anonymous, I heard several things that I related to. The home group I talk about, it was the first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous for me, and it's still my home group today over 11 years later, you know, and that's important to me because I believe that for me to stay in Alcoholics Anonymous, I have to stay involved and I have to stay in the middle. But, as a result of my drinking, you know, you start to suffer those consequences. And this was my third DUI. And so, it was at a time where I had to reflect and to actually start to get a little bit honest. I came in, I took up a seat, and I was in that seat for about 9 months, you know, and then I came to that jumping off point, you know, to where I either needed to take some action in Alcoholics Anonymous or I needed to drink. I needed to do that because I was without alcohol. I was absolutely going, you know, insane basically. And, I wasn't a fun person to be around. without alcohol. And, you know, and I got invited to a step study, you know, and, you know, I seen the steps on the wall at every meeting, you know, and I did not believe that that would do anything to change my life. That, you know, I read them, and a lot of them, I didn't even believe that would, how could that change my life? You know, but I started to go to this book study and this step study, and I started to do the work. And I started to do it half-heartedly. You know, I was the last one. We met in the back of a restaurant, and I was in the front of the restaurant just before step study, you know, doing my writings. And, you know, the miracle of this program is if you start to take some action, things start to change. And for me, things started to change from the inside out, you know. And as I started to do this and I started to see some result, then I could grasp onto this thing just a little bit, you know, just a little bit. And so I finished that step study, and, you know, it changed my life. You know, this program of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, it's a simple program for some and harder for others. You know, it just depends on how much action you want to take. You know, today, this week has been a rough week for me. You know, I lost my father on Sunday morning, and you know, and so the last few days I've been reflecting, you know, and you know, some of that stuff starts to set in, some regret and some of those things. But you know, as a result of Alcoholics Anonymous, I was able to make amends to my father. Me and him were on a good level at the time when, you know, that he left, you know, and that's only as a result of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because who knows where I would have been? Because I was that absent father, I was that, you know, those, you know, that absent son, where he never knew where I was or where I was going to be, or even, you know, most of the time how to get a hold of me, you know. And as a result of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, I was able to make those amends to him, and so we were at a good place, you know. And so I don't have that regret that I wasn't able to clear those things up with my dad before he passed, you know. You know, the other regrets, you know, that are, you know, did I do enough, did I talk to him enough, you know, those things that you deal with. But you know, I do have some peace in my heart. He was a man of faith, so you know, I know where he's at, you know, and I know that he's no longer in pain. And so, you know, that just eases that for me, you know. Yeah. But and that's all a result of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. Today, I was the guy that came to Alcoholics Anonymous on a 10-speed and riding public transportation, you know. and when it talks about unmanageability, you know, I had a good job, but you know, if you look behind the scenes, it was completely unmanageable. You know, I didn't really know how to pay my bills. I had the money, but you know, alcohol was more important. You know, alcohol was more important than my kids. As a result of Alcoholics Anonymous, the relationship that I have had with my children today, you know, they celebrate with me every time that I have an AA birthday. You know, they're there with me. You know, and for me today to be able to be that example instead of that absent father that put things, you know, put alcohol and those other things in front of those relationships, you know, I love Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, and, you know, I've had the opportunity to meet quite a few of you in the Pacific group and spend some time with some of you. You know, and that has been an example for me. You know, I really love the structure of Pacific Group and how people with even a lot of time are completely involved, you know, and it's not stand on the sidelines and watch. And so that's been a huge example for me, in my, my journey of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I don't want to be on the edges and get picked off. With that, I'll wrap this up. Today I have a good life. You know, today I have a life that a life that I wanted to have while I was out drinking, but didn't know how to obtain it, you know, and because of Alcoholics Anonymous, it was strong sponsorship and a God of my own, my understanding. I have a good life today, you know, and, you know, I just want to stay in the middle of this thing and I want to give it back, you know, because that's how I keep it. So thank you for having me. Thank you.
Thanks, Wayne. Our second 10-minute speaker is Julie S. You're on, Julie.
Hi, Julie Alcoholic. Hi, everybody. Thank you so much, Marty, for asking me to share. And it's so nice to see you guys. I miss you. Zoom's a trip, but I know that, you know, the alternative is no good. And so I can take AA how I can get it. This is how I can get it right now. I'm so grateful for that. And welcome if you're new. My sobriety date is January 19th, January 22nd, 2019. And I have a sponsor in this group, and this is my home group. And, you know, I grew up in California. I came from a really, you know, good family, a lot of love and a lot of opportunity. And you know, my outsides didn't match up the way I was feeling inside. You know, I just was, you know, full of fear a lot of the time, highly insecure. And so when I found alcohol, it was like the thing, you know, it was like drinking made me feel like I just didn't care. I love that feeling of not caring. You know, I love that feeling of power. I felt so powerless if I was not drinking, and I felt powerful if I was drinking, and that's what I loved about it. And you know, alcoholism was not an unknown topic in my house. My dad was sober many years, 29 years at one time, and my twin brother is alcoholic, and he, you know, sober again. And so, you know, alcoholism wasn't like this mysterious thing. It was kind of like on the, like we knew about it, you know? And so, I mean, from an early age, I had consequences. I mean, I remember my first job was at, you know, Baskin-Robbins 31 Flavors, right? And I get fired for, I had got caught with one of those pink Baskin-Robbins straws up my nose doing a line of cocaine on the cake cutter. And it was a big thing, you know, my parents were called and it was like, oh, what are we going to do with Julie, you know? And at 17 years old, I got a DUI and got introduced to AA. And, you know, I didn't want anything to do with AA because, you know, don't, the one thing that gives me some sort of hope, alcohol, I don't even want to consider giving that up, you know? And I think my parents kind of turned a blind eye because in high school I was, I had a boyfriend that committed suicide and it was like really traumatic and kind of confusing. And so I learned, what I learned from that is like to get excuses. You know, I collected excuses as best as I could. And I know today there's no excuse to drink, you know, but I didn't know that. And so, you know, by the time I'm 18, I have a needle in my arm. I'm drinking around the clock. I'm homeless at 19. And, you know, from the time I was 19, you know, my entire 20s, I was either homeless on the street, you know, in living in my car, in and out of hospitals, or I was in a sober living or a detox or a treatment center. It was just like one or the other. And it was so, you know, confusing. I remember when I was 23 years old and I got a phone call from my dad. And he said, I was homeless at the time. And he said, you know, meet your mom and I at this parking lot, we have some gift cards to give you, you know, and I thought the thing kind of sounded fishy because the last conversation didn't go so well, you know, and I met them in this parking lot and they served me a 3-year restraining order, you know, and I remember feeling a victim of that situation, just how could they, how dare they, you know, but it's like, I put my needs first, my selfishness and my, you know, self-centered thinking came before anything else at whatever cost, you know, and if there was brief times of sobriety, like I felt so overly full of shame and guilt, and I just, how do I deal with that feeling? But when I drink, I can't stop drinking, you know, and when I'm stopped for any length of time, I'm consumed with drinking. And you know, it's like I had met a group, I got sober in Long Beach at one time, and I fell into a group that was really active and it was attractive, and I was doing well, you know, and you know, any time in my life that I've ever had any peace or calm or hope, it's been in AA. Outside of that, when I'm running my life, it's like running it right into the ground, you know. But I think I became obsessed with normal living, you know, and I went back to school and I was sober and I got a bachelor's degree, and then I became obsessed with wanting to, you know, achieve academically, and I, you know, I worked so hard for this graduate program, and then I was in a relationship at the time, and I just, like, that was all my efforts went into those things, and I had no time for other people, I had no time for AA, and I never even thought about a God, you know, like, I think that that, you know, people must have, all those years in and out of AA must have talked about God, you know, but it's like, I didn't hear it. Like, I don't know, you know, I was just like, it wasn't like I was defiant, like there's no God, you know, or anything like that. But I just was indifferent to the whole thing. I thought it was kind of like a cute idea, but like as like a practical, like application to live life, you know, I just did never, you know, and as a result, you know, I continued to run my life into the ground and to hurt a lot of people, you know, in the meantime. And, you know, the reason I bring that up is because it's like, today I know that I have no doubt that there's a higher power, you know, it's like, I see even friends of mine that I've seen like in AA that have changed as a result of taking these spiritual actions, of taking suggestions from their sponsor and praying and meditating and stuff like that. It's like, how can I deny that there's a God, you know? And if you're new and you have a hard time with that, it's like, the more I think about it, the more it's messes me up. Like, I'm just accepting that life is good when there's something else running my life than me, you know? And, you know, today it's like, I'm just a year and a half sober. Like my default isn't like solution. Like when I encounter a fear or like a problem or something, like I'm not initially like, oh, let me just fall to my knees and get right with God. It's like I go into my old, you know, patterns. I want to run to comforts and I want to run to my defects of character and stuff. And I'm just so grateful that today I have a God and I have a sponsor that is such a good example of this program, Julie, and I have sobriety sisters and you know, there's people to run stuff by. and the difference is my reactions to life are becoming a little bit like, there's a little bit more of a pause, you know, so anyway, like as a result of some amends process, I do have a relationship with my parents and you know, that restraining order was like over 10 years ago. And a lot has happened since, you know, I didn't turn around and get sober right away. And you know, life is really dark, you know, life is so dark, you know, when I'm not sober, but it can be just as dark in sobriety if I'm not connected with you. So, you know, today I'm self-supporting through my own contributions. I have a job that I go to and I'm going back to school for another, career path, but I'm, you know, it's like, I'm not consumed with it. Like, it's not the end goal. Like if I stay here, like my true purpose is in AA, you know, and I know that, and I'm too scared to try it another way. So, you know, I really, really appreciate your example. Welcome again, if you're new. Thanks.
Thanks, Julie. A speaker tonight is Lisa S.
Okay. Hi, this is Lisa Smith, and I am an alcoholic. And I am, I'm listening to these two speakers, and I'm overwhelmed, actually. Thank you so much. I would really, really like to thank Marty, not for asking me to speak tonight. I'm extremely grateful. I saw him in a meeting, and he asked me what my sobriety date was, and I knew I was in trouble. I knew I shouldn't have given it to him, because I got a call about a week later, and here I am. But I am extremely grateful. I'm grateful for my sobriety. I've known Marty for a long time, actually. I met him probably 30 years ago when he had his store, Language of the Heart. When I came here for vacation a couple of times, we would go into a store and we would drink coffee and talk about AA, and it was so much fun. I'm very grateful for that time. And I have my birthday in AA is actually today, July 15th, 1990. I've been sober for 30 years. And just saying that is getting me pretty emotional. This is my first birthday without my dear sponsor, Millie Greenberg. She was my sponsor for 21 years in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I absolutely loved her. She was everything to me. She was a very, very dear, special lady. And I know that many of you guys know her. And I'm grateful for the time that I had with her. And so I'm thinking a lot about her today. And I have a home group. My home group is the Ray Harrison Group in Des Moines, Iowa. It's the oldest meeting. It's about 62 years old. And it's a meeting of Judge Ray Harrison, who was a judge, and he was also an alcoholic, and he's the one that started the meeting. And it's a great meeting. It's a speaker meeting. So if you ever come to town, if you want my phone number, I'll give it to you, and we'll make sure that you get to our meeting. It's a speaker meeting, and it's a lot of fun. And I am sponsored. Now that Millie is gone, I have Joanne Lopresti Thaler, and she is in Oregon, and I love her to death. Actually, she knows me probably just as good as Millie did, because I've been talking to Joanne on and off for probably 25 years. And so when Millie passed away, actually before Millie even passed away, I was calling Joanne, because towards the end there, it was really difficult for Millie to talk and to really comprehend what was going on. And so I spent time on the phone talking to Joanne, and Joanne was also sponsored by Millie. And so Joanne is helping me now. And I love Joanne so much. I'm so grateful for her guidance. And my first sponsor in this program for the first 8 years of my sobriety was Wayne B. And I am grateful for his sponsorship. I'm grateful for the things that Wayne taught me early on in my sobriety. I'm feeling really nostalgic, and I'm really not like that. Most of the time, I'm just kind of light, and I feel like I'm just, you know, I am freaking emotional. You know what I mean? It's like, I'm emotional. Like, if something hits me, it hits me hard. You know, if I feel it, I feel it hard. And so it's really weird for me to kind of feel like this, but I guess this is what happens when you have a birthday. So I'm just going to go with it. But I am grateful to be here. Very, very grateful to be here. And I really want to thank Wayne and Julie for your shares. Thank you so much. You were absolutely amazing. And Wayne, I'm really sorry to hear about the loss of your father. That's a very hard thing to go to. I can only imagine what that's like. So I will be praying for you. So I've had a great day today. I went to work, and I got a lot of happy birthdays when I was working today. And of course, I got a call from the beautiful Debbie Davis, who will always be my AA sister. She calls every single year. She never forgets. And my family called, and my sister put a beautiful thing online for me. And when I got off work today, my mom was here, and my mom was giving me hugs and congratulating me. And, you know, the thing that's so beautiful about Alcoholics Anonymous is that, you know what, it's God, it's people like you, it's working the steps, it's sponsoring people, it's being sponsored. It's everything that's all encompassing that takes us to where we are. And my family loves you guys. My family absolutely loves Alcoholics Anonymous, and they are so grateful. And my mom came in today and she said, Lisa, I can't believe it. She said, I'm so grateful that AA and God gave you back to us. And I think probably one of the best compliments that I ever received from a family member was from my sister, who is actually here in my bedroom. She's laying on my bed, and she wanted to be here, and I love her to death. And if and she had told me once, she said, you know, Lisa, she goes, I don't even remember how you used to be. And that's a big deal. That's Alcoholics Anonymous working in my life. And I'm grateful for that. And so I guess I'm just going to kind of share with you what it used to be like, what happened, and what it's like today. I went to my meeting tonight, actually. I have a 6 o'clock meeting here, and I got this beautiful, beautiful chip. You probably can't see it, but it's a beautiful chip, and on the inside, it's got like a pink, purplish color, and it's got the three X's on it. And so my meeting tonight gave me this chip, which I'm incredibly grateful for. And then I came home, and my sister had a cake for me and a gift for me, and then I opened up another gift from Tanya, who is here tonight. I'm hoping Tanya, who I sponsor there in LA, and I love her dearly, and she gave me this beautiful little keychain, talks about sponsorship on it. And Tanya, I love you so much. I love sponsoring people today, and I'm so grateful that you're in my life. And then I came here and I'm sharing tonight, so that's a pretty darn good birthday. I really liked what Julie was saying. I was kind of in and out of this program, and it was very difficult for me to get sober. You know, where I'm at today, my life is so beautiful compared to where it was when I came in. You know, I had a nickname, you know, when I was out there drinking, and if anybody were to call me that nickname today, I'd probably have to slap you. But that was my nickname, and I answered to it, and it's not very nice, so I'm not going to say it here online in the meeting. But that's how I was represented out there in the world. I lived in Des Moines, Iowa, grew up here my whole life, and I was drinking here, and I drank at a little place called Locust Tap, and it was a little hole in the wall. It was a kind of the bar that you would walk into. It had a jukebox in the corner, and you always knew where the restrooms were because you could smell them like right when you walked in the door. And there was usually just a bunch of old men drinking there, and that's where I felt comfortable. I really didn't want to drink anywhere else because I knew I wasn't good enough to go anywhere else. So I stayed there for a large part of the time, and I drank. Eventually, I got a drunk driving charge, and that introduced me to Alcoholics Anonymous for the first time. And I remember walking into my first meeting, and there was a gal there, and her name was Jackie, and she is still sober here in Des Moines, Iowa. And I remember I walked into this huge meeting place, and it's actually called the White House, and it's a big White House. And I remember walking into that meeting, and she said, hi. And I said, hi. And I had my court card in my hand, and I wanted to get my court card signed. And she was very sweet, and she offered me to come into the meeting, and she said, do you want to read how it works? And I said, no. You know, and I had an attitude, of course, because that was my middle name, was whatever. And as a matter of fact, I have a magnet on my refrigerator for my family, because that's what I used to say to them all the time. And so I said, no, I don't want to read how it works. And so I very quickly left that meeting and ended back up at Locust Tap again. And that was pretty much the way that I drank and didn't drink on and off for, I don't even know how long it was. It was probably 2-3 years that I was in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it was very difficult for me to get sober. And I have to tell you, the reason why it was so hard for me to get sober is because I didn't know I was an alcoholic, and I didn't have a lot of people explaining it to me. And if they did, I don't remember it because I was too busy drinking. I was one of those people that came into meetings drinking. I used to bring my Budweiser with me, and I used to bring my bag of tobacco with my rolling papers, and I would roll cigarettes, and I would drink Budweiser, and I would promptly get kicked out because I didn't know how to be in a meeting and behave. And there was a gentleman there in the meeting, and he always used to say, Lisa, if you can just behave, you could stay. But I couldn't, so I was always getting kicked out of meetings. And it really used to irritate me, but they, you know, I couldn't stay because I was disrupting the meeting. And so they didn't have any, you just said, you have to go. And so I would leave, and it was very difficult. I remember at one point I had community service to do. And so I was, you know, doing community service with this guy who was the houseman of the White House. And he was like the house manager. And so I started, like, you know, seeing him. And so he helped me with my community service. And we decided that it was time to, you know, run away together and have a sober life. And so at the time I was working at 7-Eleven from 11 to 7, and I was putting stuff in my car. I was like getting cartons of cigarettes and food and filling my gas tank up. And the guy, they used to call the guy Crazy Charlie. That's who I was going for. His name was Crazy Charlie. He was the houseman. And all I remember is that him and I, we decided to leave Iowa together in this car that was packed with everything from 7-Eleven, little convenience store. And so before we left, we broke into the coffee kitty that they had at the White House. It was a big, you know, metal canister. We broke into it. We took all the cash. We left the checks, but we took all the cash. And we were going to make our way to Colorado from Iowa. Well, we ended up in Junction City, Kansas, which is the opposite direction. And he left me there. And he took my car and everything that I had. And I came back home. And that was horrible. Anyway, so at some point when you get a sponsor, you have to make amends, which really sucked because I had to pay my part back, you know, with interest, because that's the kind of sponsor I had when I was new. But anyway, so I just had a lot of those kind of stories in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous, just drinking, you know, taking guys out with me to drink. And I was a absolutely horrible example, a horrible example, but I was a sick, sick alcoholic, and I didn't have a solution. I was living my life based on what I knew, and what I knew was selfish, self-seeking, inconsiderate, reason, you know, I mean, all of those things that the book talks about. You know, if you go to the ABCs and you start reading on step three, where you go through and you read about the real alcoholic and all the different things that we do, that's who I was, and I didn't know any other way to live. So I ended up one morning, and it was July 15th of 1990. I woke up and I was on the floor of this guy's house. And I sat there for a while and I thought, you know what? I can't do this anymore. And I had that moment of desperation. And I got up and I left and I went across the street, and they had a payphone, the kind that you actually could drive up to. And so I got on the phone. And of course, the desperation left me that quick. And I started calling all the different guys that I used to drink with, and nobody was home. So I went down to Fleur and Grand, where I always went. I was at Fleur and Grand every single day, whether I was sober or not. And I went into the meeting, and I was really depressed, and I didn't know what to do. And I went up to that person that used to kick me out of meetings all the time. Because when I would listen to this person in meetings, I didn't like him because he kicked me out, but I knew he had an answer because he was happy, joyous, and free. And so I went up to him after the meeting and I said, I need help. And I started to cry. And we went out and we drove around for about 3 hours, and he shared with me his experience in Alcoholics Anonymous. He talked about his alcoholism. And the thing that really stuck with me was when he said, alcohol is not your problem. Alcohol is your solution. Now, when you're drinking and you don't understand why you're drinking, but you know that you've already ruined your kids' lives, you've lost your kids in a divorce, you know, you've gone through all this stuff, you're living in cars, abandoned homes, you know, you're just going to treatment five times, doing everything you're doing. When I hear somebody say alcohol was my solution, that made sense. And it clicked. And I was like, that is right. That's exactly what it is. And then I could go back and I could say, you know what, that counselor, these people that tried to tell me that if I just quit drinking, my life would be okay, they meant well. They said exactly what they were supposed to say. But I didn't understand that, because it wasn't enough for me just to not drink. Because when I didn't drink, I was thinking about drinking. Because I had an obsession, And I didn't know that that's what I had. And so when he started to talk to me about alcoholism, something just opened up for me. And I felt so hopeful for the first time in a long time. And he said to me, Lisa, if you come and do what we do, you can have this too. And I believed him. I believed him. And he became my sponsor. And he was my sponsor for the first 8 years of my sobriety. And I'm going to always be grateful for him because he shared with me a lot about alcoholism. And he worked with me. And he shared the steps with me. And he helped me identify things in my nature that were opposite of what God would want in my life. You know, my defects of character, my pride and my envy and my, you know, everything that was going on with me. And I had to really uncover all of those things in my life that didn't serve me well anymore. And I had to learn how to let go. And in How It Works, it says that we have to let go of our old ideas. Absolutely. Or the result is nihil. That result, nihil, that's nothing. If I don't let go of those old ideas, I'm not going to change. So I had to learn how to let go of those old ideas. And it came with knowing who and what I was, and then taking action, taking different action in my life so that I could be a different person with God's help and with the steps and with the sponsor and sponsoring people. And I'm telling you, my first 4 years, I was so busy, you know, my sponsor wouldn't let me go to school until I was a year sober. But then when I did, I ended up going to college. I became a sign language interpreter. And I got busy. We were going to conferences and conventions, and I was sponsored. I would sponsor people that weren't even alcoholic. Like if they were in the room, I would run up to them and corner them. I'd be like, do you need a sponsor? You know, and eventually they'd look at me like, you know what? Get the hell away from me. You know, you're freaking me out because I was like so desperate to like work with people and share with the information that was given to me because I was so grateful. And I was so happy. But on the other side of that, I was crazy. They called me Sybil my first year of sobriety. And I started fistfights with my AA sisters. And they didn't want me around. I remember going to a conference one time and my home group was there. We had a very small home group. Nobody liked us here in Des Moines because Wayne ended up going out to California, fell in love with Pacific Group. So he came back here and he tried to do what you guys do out there. So we like started, you know, a meeting every day, we had watches, we had moves, we had all that stuff that you guys have. And they didn't want any of that here. I mean, they were like, hell no, we don't want that here. And so they didn't like us. But that small number of people that we had in my home group, we would travel everywhere. At one point, we were at this conference and we were in the hotel room getting ready to leave. And I was like, great, where are we gonna go? And they all looked at me and they said, you know, Lisa, you can stay here. You don't really need to come with us if you don't want to. And I was like, well, what are you talking about? They're like, well, you know, yeah, you know, we really don't like you very much. You're kind of a pain. And so, of course, you know, I was defiant. So I followed him anyway and caused havoc. And that's what I did. But that was early in my sobriety. And I'm grateful for that, you know, because what you have in Pacific Group is really special. And I got to be a part of Pacific Group for quite a while. And I'm always going to be grateful for that. You know, I was thinking about speaking tonight and I was thinking about all the people that I've had experiences with and all the people that had come into my lives, you know, people that aren't there anymore, you know, Millie and Don Newcomb and, you know, just all of these beautiful people that I was able to be a part of. And I'm so grateful, you know, going to Judy Ross's bagel thing, you know, on the holidays and just really being a part of. Because I never really fit anywhere. You know, I always tried to fit in at different places and with different groups. And I just always felt like there was something missing in me and I didn't know what it was. And when I found Alcoholics Anonymous, I found my people. I found my tribe, you know, and I'm so grateful for that because my first sponsor used to say, stay in the middle of the herd. If you stay in the middle of the herd, you're not going to get picked off as easy. So stay in the middle with us and do what we do and you can have this. And they were absolutely correct because from the day I got sober, I haven't had a drink since. You know, and that's a beautiful thing about Alcoholics Anonymous is you just, you know, be a part of. And if you're new here tonight, that's the most important message I can tell you. You know, if you're still drinking or you're struggling, keep coming back no matter what, because hopefully one day if you don't die, you know, you might get it. You might be able to stay and you'll have a wonderful life. So that's what I did. You know, people told me all the time, just keep coming back. Just keep coming back. And so I did. And I'm grateful for that. So when I was 4 years sober, I moved out to California, and I lived in California for 19 years. And when I first moved to California, our first apartment that we had, I moved out there with an AA sister and one of the girls I sponsored. So we moved out there, and we got an apartment. We put our bags in the apartment. I think we got there like during the week. That weekend, we were off to the International Convention in San Diego. And I mean, and that's how my sobriety was out there. I got involved with Pacific Group. I was there, you know, 7 days a week. I went to the yard. I went to watches. I went to birthdays. I did everything. And I'm grateful for that. And I have to tell you, quite honestly, and if you're a strong member of this group, you'll understand when I say that I had 3 hours on a Saturday to do everything. Because I was so busy during the week. I was working in meetings. And then Saturday after the yard, right before the Saturday night meeting, that's when I was washing my clothes, cleaning my house, doing everything I had to do. Because then the next day there was usually a party or there was, you know, I had the meeting Sunday night. And so it was just a busy, busy time. And I met so many wonderful people doing that. You know, I have friends. And I mean, I had so many people call me today from California, friends that I've had for 19 years. And those relationships to me today are priceless. They're so wonderful to me. Anyway, so when I moved out there, I was still a sign language interpreter. And, you know, I struggled. I had hard times out there too. You know, I was involved, but I was living life. And I was still selfish and self-centered in certain areas, you know. And I got in relationships that I shouldn't have. And I got in a relationship with a guy that wasn't an alcoholic. And he didn't want me going to AA, so I didn't go. It was just that easy. You know, he loved me. I loved him. No AA. Thank you very much. And so I left for a year. And I came back to AA when I was 10 years sober. And during that year, I very rarely ever called Millie. And except for that 1 year, I literally have called Millie at least 5 days a week, every single week. And, there was that 1 year that I very rarely ever called her, but when I did, this is the one reason why I will always love Millie. She's the only one in my life that has ever loved me unconditionally. And when I would call her just to check in, because sometimes it was getting really hard, I would call and she would say, "How are you, sweetie?" And I would say, "I'm fine, Millie." And she would, the only thing she would ever say to me is, "I hope to see you back on Wednesday night. As soon as you can." And other than that, she didn't say anything. She didn't lecture me. She didn't try to get me back. She just loved me. And when I came back, when I was 10 years sober, I was crazy. I was absolutely insane. And I remember walking into the Wednesday night meeting, and I was walking down that first aisle there where the tapers are. I was walking down that aisle, and this newcomer came up to me. And I said, "Hi, how are you?" And she said, "Oh, I'm good." She goes, "How are you?" And I said, "Oh, I'm not very good, just coming back. I didn't drink, but I'm crazy," and blah, blah, blah. And so she started to talk to me, and I'll never forget it. Her name is Fran. She's gone now. She said, "Well, you know, let's talk about, you know, what you know." And I was like 10 years sober at the time, and she was in her first year. And she said, "Well, what do you understand about the first step?" And so, of course, I started to give her all of my wonderful wisdom. And she said, "Oh, no, that's why you're crazy. That's not what the first step means. No, you don't understand." So what happened at that time was I just kind of saw red, and I took my hands and I started to put them around her throat. And there was a gal named Carla that you all know. She grabbed me and she turned me around and she said, "You come with me. I've been where you've been when I was 10 years sober. We're working the steps." She saved Fran's life. Of course, I'm kind of a chicken, so Fran probably would have beat me up, but I was going at her throat. And so then I started working the steps with Carla, and I worked the steps with Millie as well. So it was the three of us working the steps. And I really was crazy. And you know what? I had caused a lot of damage in Alcoholics Anonymous. And so I had to do step work, and I had to really seriously look at what I had done in sobriety. And that was very humbling to me, because I had hurt a lot of people at Alcoholics Anonymous, and that scared me because I didn't know if I was going to be able to stay, and I wanted forgiveness, but I had to do the work to get it, you know? And so that's what I did. I went through all the steps with Carla. Millie sat in on the fourth or the fifth and the eighth, and it was those two talking to me through that entire process. And that was a beautiful thing to have Carla and Millie together going through the steps with me. And then my life started to change. And, you know, not to say that I still wasn't selfish and self-centered, because that stuff doesn't necessarily just go away. It gets better. But for me, there were certain areas that took longer than others. And so I proceeded to get married, and I dated somebody for a long time in AA, and then I eventually got married, and I got married to a wonderful man, and our marriage lasted about 3 years, and that was a tough breakup, because there was a lot of damage done, and his brother and sister are also in Alcoholics Anonymous, and that was a hard one for me because I love them very much, but it caused a lot of separation. And you know, with my alcoholism, I understand today that my alcoholism is separation from God, and I can't be separated from people. I can't have that, obstruction with other people. I can't. Separation is really difficult in sobriety, and I don't want to feel that way. And so at that time I was talking to Millie, but I was also talking to Joanne. And so she knew about all of this. But I got married to him, and we stayed married for 3 years, and then we ended up getting divorced, and we're really, really good friends today. We talk probably, I don't know, once every 2 weeks. He actually texted me today and wished me a happy birthday. And then he called me, and so we have a really nice relationship. So when we got divorced, I moved out on my own, and I was going to a home group out in Santa Clarita, out in Canyon Country where we were living. And I had a wonderful home group out there. My home group out there was Sunday night, and I have forgotten the name of it, but it was Sunday night, and I loved that meeting. And then I decided, and I had been feeling like this for quite some time, that I wanted to come back home, that I wanted to come back to Des Moines, Iowa. Now, granted, when I moved out there, when we were driving and we went over the state line and I was in California, I had an ice scraper because I live in Des Moines, and I threw that puppy out the window and I said, never again. I am never going back to Des Moines, Iowa. And of course, here I am. but I was really having that feeling that I wanted to be back here. And my family was here. My grandchildren were here. My two boys were here. And I was raised here. And so I thought about it. And Millie always told me, she was very wise. Millie always said, Lisa, if you're unsure about it at all, don't take any action. And she would always say, just wait a week. Just wait a week. Every time I would talk to her, she's like, let's just give it one more week. You know, and it ended up being like 2 years. And so finally, I just said, you know, Millie, I really need to move back to Des Moines. And she said, you know what? I think that that's a good idea. She said, we'll miss you, but I think that that's really, you know, where you need to be. And in 2 weeks, I was packed up. So I'm an alcoholic. In 2 weeks, I'm packed up. My mom flew out, and her and I drove back. And I got here to Des Moines, and my family was here to greet me. And I was, you know, so happy to be here. And all of a sudden, I looked around, and I thought, holy God, my car is in Des Moines, Iowa. I mean, I had come back here to visit, but my car was never here. And then it hit me that I lived in Des Moines, Iowa, and I had become an LA snob, right? But I didn't have a reason to be a snob because I didn't have anything in LA, but I was a snob. And all I remember is, I got to go back. What am I doing here? I can't be in Des Moines. And my family heard that for probably the first year. And after a while, they got so sick of me, they finally said, go back to California. We don't want you here anymore. And then I kind of started to ease into it a little bit. And then I realized that, you know what, this is exactly where I want to be. And this is exactly where God wants me to be. And, you know, everything in my sobriety, it's always been one thing always leads me to the next. And God has these beautiful plans for my life. And if I can step out of the way and see when the door opens and go through the door with guidance, it's usually something that leads me to the next. And when I'm going through that door, if it's a smooth transition and my gut feels okay and I'm talking to people about it, it's usually a good thing for me. It's only when I'm butting my head against the wall going, I want to do this. I want, you know, that's usually when it's not a good idea. But this turned out to be a really, really good idea. And when I moved back here, I did not get a new sponsor. Millie continued to be my sponsor, which I'm grateful for. But I was always calling Joanne as well. It's really funny because I was thinking about this the other day, and Joanne, who's here tonight, is so funny. She's always been in my life. I mean, she just like always knows everything that I'm doing because I just, you know, we're just always talking and I'm always asking her for advice and stuff like that. And so when I moved back here and I started going to AA here, Millie was sponsoring me, but I was kind of that AA snob. You know, when I moved here, I thought, well, you got to know that AA is not as good, you know, here as it is in LA, because LA is everything, you know. And I talked like that for a while in meetings until I started to realize that AA here is awesome. And AA is awesome anywhere. Anywhere I go, it's awesome because it's whatever I make of it. You know, am I there for the new person or am I going there to try to be somebody? I'm going there for the new person. And when I got here and I started to get involved with Alcoholics Anonymous here, I fell in love with AA here. And now I have these beautiful friends, you know. Like I've got my Wendy, and Lauren is actually one of the girls I sponsored. She's on the meeting tonight. She's from here. And I got involved in this Wednesday night meeting, and a really good friend of mine, John, his dad was in an assisted living there. And he continually got worse, but they started an AA meeting for him so that his dad could be wheeled in so that he could come to the meeting. Well, one of the traditions is we always had wintergreen mints, Lifesaver mints that we would pass around to people. And because John's dad, the one who was sick, Keith, he loved sugar, like he was a total sugar freak. So we would always give him candy and stuff during the meeting. Well, as he got sicker and sicker, you know, he couldn't really have candy anymore. And then he was bedridden. And then he eventually passed away, which is a very, very sad day. He was a beautiful man. He was 40 years sober, a beautiful man. But we all continued to stay together in that meeting. And the assisted living let us continue to have the meeting there because they liked us. And so we have continued the tradition of that meeting. And so now every time we have the meeting, somebody brings wintergreen mints and everybody has to have one mint in honor of Keith, which is really cool. So it's like little things like that that are really special to me, you know, to meet people in sobriety and to be a part of people's lives. And when they leave, you know, this earth, we get to continue to carry on their legacy like I do with Millie. You know, I talk about Millie all the time here. Because Millie had all these beautiful little, you know, sayings and things that she used to pass on to people, you know. And the one thing that I've shared with everybody here is, don't say blah, blah when blah's enough. And that was Millie's famous saying. So I am so incredibly grateful for Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm grateful for God. I'm grateful for Pacific Group. I'm grateful for every group that I've been a part of, my family, my friends. And for Marty, for, you know, allowing me to share tonight. And I really want to thank you for being with me and doing a 12-step call on me at 30 years of sobriety. I'm extremely grateful. So thank you very much. Wow, how do they do that? Is that like a meetup?
Yeah, it's a thing. This
birthdays at this meeting, we define sobriety as freedom from alcohol, pills, pot, or anything that should affect you from the neck up. If you're a regular attendee of this meeting and would like to take a cake with us, please email our scribe, Ann P., at birthdays@pacificgroupla.org.
Hi, everybody. My name is Ann, and I'm an alcoholic. Don't forget your picture. Thank you.
Please do this we're going to change it up to 6:30 p.m. instead of 7:15. It's getting a little hectic. Otherwise, you have to wait until the next week to take your cake and get recognized. We have several birthdays tonight, but we got a special duo singing happy birthday to all of our birthday recipients.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, happy birthday, it's happy birthday to you. Keep coming back.
Thank you, folks. And celebrating birthdays tonight, our first birthday is for John B. for 1 year, and his sponsor is some groovy dude named Marty S. Our second birthday is for Danny R. for 2 years, sponsored by Barbara B. Oh, it just caught up to me. Our third birthday is for Kaya J., 3 years sober, sponsored by Onyx B. We have another 3 year birthday for Kevin B., sponsored by Ron G. Our next birthday is for Jody N. for 5 years, sponsored by Lydia W. Next birthday is for Cindy C. for 7 years, sponsored by God. We have a 9 year birthday for Evie B., sponsored by Joan Avanti. We have a 10 year birthday for Dave W., sponsored by Ashok D. We have a 10-year birthday for Sean C. Oh, we have another 18-year birthday for Guy B., sponsored by that same groovy dude, Marty S. We have a 25-year birthday for Tobin J., sponsored by Tim K. We have a 30-year birthday for Ron St. J., sponsored by Tom B. Ooh, we have a 35-year birthday for Linda L., sponsored by Marianne K. And we have a 35-year birthday for Jim B., sponsored by Glenn R. So we had 14 birthdays, totaling 193 years of sobriety. The average is 13.78. Happy birthday to all the birthday people. We have a custom at the Pacific Group of donating $1 for each candle on our birthday cakes at the end of the year. This candle money is our contributions to AA organizations worldwide. If you wish to participate in this custom, please email our treasurer, Betty H., at treasurer@pacificgroupla.org.